Yo, what's up, everybody? It's Jamel Gibbs, your family-oriented entrepreneur. Welcome to another podcast episode. This is the Business and Investing Podcast, where you learn all things business and investing related. And one of my favorite topics on this podcast and on my YouTube channel in general is passive income, rental property investing. I believe that wholesaling is a great way to make money in real estate, for example, but it is active income. You have to get up and put in the work to be able to make that money every single month, every single day, every single week, right? With passive income, you can do the work one time and it'll pay you over and over and over again. So for example, a rental property, you can buy one rental property, and as long as you own that asset will continue to pay you. And that's why I believe there's a fine balance between the two. I think that you do need both because you can use the wholesaling profits to put into having the ability to get more rental properties, for example. But the rental properties is where you can make money in your sleep. So although you incorporate active income, for example, through wholesaling, you still want to have that passive income play. And I think the passive income should be your end goal at the end of the day. That's why I teach passive income streams on this particular channel. And our special guest is an investor in the Atlanta market. He's killing it. He is an active investor. He's actually sitting in one of his Airbnbs right now. So you might hear some noise in the background and all of that stuff. That makes this real. This is done in real time, right? We're active. We're not sitting in an office and telling you exactly what to do. We're actually doing the business. That's why I call myself the family-oriented entrepreneur. You're going to hear my kids in the background. This is real life. Life happens in the moment. It doesn't happen when you want it to happen, right? So our special guest, he put out a video. I reached out to him about a month ago. Now, I've known Keto for, I think we met, 4 or 5 years ago at this mastermind. Yep. Out in Tampa, Florida. But you put out a video about a month ago or so. It was talking about tenant horror stories. And that's a common thing that I hear and see in, on my YouTube channel through the comments and things like that. So I wanted to talk about some of that because I think that the tenant horror stories, things that people hear can hold them back from taking action as a real estate investor. Oh, man, 3 o'clock in the morning calls from a tenant. Man, I don't want to deal with that. And I can prevent people from really becoming wealthy through real estate. So we'll get into some of that stuff. We'll talk about some step-by-step approaches that people can take in order to be able to really monitor their tenant screening process and how the business actually works. And also, does it actually happen? Have you ever experienced this stuff? Because for me, I don't really have a lot of tenant horror stories. And I'm sure you can relate to that as well. So we'll talk about all of this stuff, man. But to begin, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, my man?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Jamel, thank you so much for this opportunity. It certainly was a pleasure meeting you some years ago and, just following you along the way and peeping your Instagram and the things that you're doing online. So I appreciate who you are in the investor community and who you are in our community. So thanks so much for this opportunity and for allowing me on.
Appreciate that, man.
Absolutely. I'm Keto J. Johnson. I always throw in my middle initial because I grew up in a household with an entrepreneurial father. And he taught me as a kid, he said, son, whenever you're doing business, use your middle initial. So I've always done it for whatever reason. He told me to do it. Dad said, do it. I continue to do so. So Keto J. Johnson, I'm based here out of Atlanta, Georgia. And I've been in real estate since I acquired my first property when I was 20 years old. So it's 26 years and counting now. And I do all things real estate. Sometimes it's interesting. People say, what exactly is it that you do? And I say, well, it's probably easier for me to tell you the things I've never done. Right. If you can name it in residential real estate, I've either still do it or at least done it at some point over the last 26 years. And I'm also a broker. And so my brokerage has a strategic focus on having always worked with investors, but over the last 3 or 4 years, We've been doing more and more on the commercial side, so working with commercial properties and commercial clients, office buildings, multifamily, et cetera, but all things real estate, man. I'm just excited about real estate. It's something that I'm passionate about. It's what has brought me to a place of financial freedom, and I get most excited when I can assist someone else in using this same chosen vehicle, the vehicle of real
Yeah,
estate,
man.
accomplish some financial freedom in their life as well.
Absolutely, man. Very similar story to mine. I bought my first, I started investing when I was 21. I'm 42 now. You've been doing this a little longer than I have. And we both started early 20s, man. So what was the thing that sparked your interest to get started in real estate in general?
Yeah, great question. And I got a simple answer. I mentioned having grown up with an entrepreneurial father. So I was and his entrepreneurial path had to do with construction, right? He owned a construction company, built some houses in the past. And so I grew up around that, right? And so I was always passionate about just business in general, but wasn't quite sure which path that would take for me. When I was 20, I got married early. And when I got married, I moved out of my parents' house into my own house. And it's a long story around that. We'd probably do another podcast on what I learned through that process. But that was of a house that needed a lot of work, a lot of repair. And I went in, put in some sweat equity, n not knowing that real estate investing was going to be my path. I was just looking for a place to raise a family, right? So went in, acquired the property, did some sweat equity, lived in the house for about a year, and I'm flipping through TV stations looking for something to watch. And I come across this lady named Oprah Winfrey interviewing a guy named Robert Kiyosaki, who had just written a book at that time, a new release, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So I went out, bought the book, read it cover to cover, and realized that some of the principles that he was teaching, like, I think I could probably do this because I just renovated a house, and this is how, I'm a spiritual guy. So this is how God worked for me. Couple weeks after reading that book, I'm in Kroger, shopping for groceries, and I come just run into this guy named Chris Jaswell. I don't know how we ended up talking. Ended up telling him about this book that I had just read, and he began to tell me that he was a investor and property manager. And he said, "Keto, if you want to exercise the principles that you just read in that book," he said, "let me sell you your next house, and I'll find you a tenant and manage the tenant for your current house for you free." And I thought, why not, right? Took him up on his offer, bought another house that became my first house that I renovated. It became my first rental property. And that put me on a path to moving every 2 years, capital gain, the capital gain rule around 2 years in a house and sell it within five, and you can walk away with the profit or gain tax free. And that put me on a path to acquiring property, updating it, and moving every 2 years. And I kind of still do that, honestly. I just counted. I moved into another property about a year and a half ago, and that was my 13th primary residence since,
That's actually a strategy that a lot of people don't realize you can implement to pay off a house within a couple of, you do that a couple of times, you'll pay off a house within, I think it's 5 to 10 years, 5 to 8 years or something like that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So you're literally, you'll buy a fixer upper, you live in it for, let's say, a year or two, say 2 years, you get to save money on the capital gains tax, you move out, you take that money, you go buy another fixer upper, and you keep doing that until you get to your the house that you really want to live in, and you just pay cash for it and won't have a mortgage. You know what I
Exactly.
mean?
Exactly.
But that's an old school strategy, man. You're telling your age a little bit, bro.
Yeah,
And
hey, but it still works. It still works today.
it does, man. It's funny because people think that, this, let me ask you this. Is there anything new under the sun when it comes to real estate?
Not at all.
Not at all, man. Same tactics we use, same stuff people been doing for 100 years.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, how you approach it given the market that you're in. And that's really all it is, man.
The only thing that changes is what we call it, right? Because a lot of times, you know, especially in the marketing world, we're going to put a new spin on it, make it sound like something new, right? But it's really the same thing.
Yep. So you started off kind of house hacking, buying fix, not necessarily house hacking, but really buying fixer uppers, living in them, and then selling them. That's kind of how you started in real estate, and then you transitioned into other things.
That's exactly how I started. I started off in strategically looking for property that I would live in that needed work, so that I could put in sweat equity, something that I could get with some value or undervalued, right? And I could go in and put the work in while I live over the next 24 months, and put the value in, or put the work in, raise the value, then I'd turn it into rental property, and then I'd rent it for another 2 years, right? According to capital gain law, you had to live in it 2 of the previous 5 in order to get away with the gain tax free, right? So I'd live there 2, renovate it while I was there, move out, rent it for 2, so I could get 2 more years of appreciation. And somewhere between year 4 and 5, the goal would be to sell it and to take that profit and roll it into something else. So that was the initial strategy.
So for somebody looking to get started with something like that, right? Listen, you know, we have a lot of brand new investors listening to this podcast right now. Mm-hmm. How much capital would somebody need in order to accomplish exactly that?
Yeah, well, so if you're going to live in it, you can acquire that property with an FHA or a conventional loan. So, which, you know, you're going to need 3.5% to 5% down, which is a lot less than the average 20%+ down. If you were to go to a lender and say, I want to buy an investment property. So to me, you know, my opinion is that for someone just getting started, if there's any way you can leverage that first acquisition as your primary residence, then you can get in with the best interest rates and the lowest down payment. That is the way to get started. And you mentioned house hacking a moment ago, right? Most times we think house hacking, which, you know, in its truest sense, it's buying 2, 3, or 4 unit property, living in one, renting out the others, you know. But I want to challenge the viewer to consider house hacking could also mean buying a 4-bedroom and you only need 2, and you rent other 2 bedrooms, right? Or buying them with a basement, single family house, if that's what it takes, right? And you rent out the basement. So the whole goal is to strategically acquire real estate with the lowest down payment, the best interest rate, and to make some component of that acquisition income producing. To me, that's the best way to get started.
Absolutely, I 100% agree. And you're going after these, if you're doing that as a fixer up, you're probably going after a 203K loan, correct?
Yeah, if you are looking to get the acquisition funds along with the purchase, you know, priced at the 3.5% down payment, the FHA, then a 203K is the way to go.
And one more tidbit for you guys, a quick tip, just so that you can open up your mind to house hacking as well. Friend of mine, he's another educator here in my local area. He just bought, his house, I think it's like $1.5 million house, right? Mm-hmm. But he has 20 acres of land that comes with this house. Mm-hmm. He just told me the other day he got the AAU football team to agree to pay him $350 a week to use one of the fields that's on his property. And all he's going to do is create a football field. He's going to have the company come out and spray the yard lines and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But then he also has another company who sells food. So they're like a food truck company. They agreed to pay him an additional $100 just to come out and sell to the attendees of the football game. So that's $450 a week he just created, and he's not even living in the house yet.
You know
what I mean? That's another form of house hacking. So, you know, real estate, what I love about it is you can be as creative as you want to be. Mm-hmm. There's nothing stopping you from, you know, what you can actually accomplish with it. You just got to think outside the box. So like Keto said, how many do you have 4 bedrooms and you only live in one? Great. rent out the other ones. You know, my
Absolutely.
man Idris is doing that right now with these what does he call it? Not group home living. It's
Like independent living, or
it's
he's renting rooms.
rooming houses. Rooming
Yes.
houses. You know, it's something that was practiced in New York when I used to live there. But he had another name for it. I can't remember the name. It was rooming houses in a sense, but I just can't remember the exact name for it. I'll be sure to link it up at the top. We just did a podcast with him not so long ago, man. But, you
But
know,
just
just getting started.
let me, on that point, let me make this point real quick, because the housing crisis is such a challenge all around the country that that's becoming more and more, I guess I'd use the word acceptable, but it's happening more and more, so much so, because a large portion of my portfolio in the inner city of Atlanta is Section 8 with the Atlanta Housing Authority. And they have recently began taking the steps necessary to approve single occupancy units to be able to allow someone to use a voucher to rent a room, right? And that was completely unheard of just a couple of years ago. But the housing crisis is so huge that I think that's the way of the future, even with these companies like PadSplit and those types of investor firms that are creating opportunities to rent out rooms on a large scale.
Absolutely, man. I think that, you know, if you can take advantage of these opportunities and you can find a need in your market, you know, for example, if if there's a housing shortage, you open up the opportunities for people to have available housing, you're going to make bank. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's what we do as real estate investors. We solve problems. You know, if you can solve a problem, you can make a lot of money at the end of the day. So what are some of the obstacles that people will face, you know, getting started in investing?
I think one of the biggest obstacles is just the whole knowledge piece, and I almost hesitate to say lack of knowledge, because when I first started, it was a lack of knowledge. I didn't have the internet, right? I didn't have all of the resources that I have available to me now. But Jamel, brother, I really think now what is just as a problem, just as large of a problem, is lack of knowledge is too much
Too
knowledge.
much.
It's too much knowledge. People are, I'm seeing more and more confused because real estate is so large, right? There are so many, there's an unlimited number of strategies. We've probably talked about 10, and we've been talking for 15 minutes, right? There's so many different strategies, right? And so the challenge I think many times that people have is trying to figure out which strategy makes the most sense for them. Not and makes the most sense for them based on where they are in their life today, right? There are plenty of people who, wholesaling might be an example, who may start with wholesaling, but they may not be 100% passionate about wholesaling. But that's just the entry, right? Just because you start with wholesaling doesn't mean you have to end there, right? So taking the opportunity to really figure out like what makes the most sense for you based on where you are in your life. In your life right now. And that boils down to like how much time do you have, right? Because if you don't have a lot of time, then wholesaling might not be the place you start, because it takes time, right? How much time do you have? How much money? What type of money are you working with? What does your credit look like? And I always tell people, like, there's really no right or wrong answer to any one of those questions, but you have to be clear with yourself about what you bring to the table in regard to those three areas of your life. And then based on how you answer those questions determines the strategy or strategies that make the most sense for where you are right now.
No, I definitely 100% agree with that, man. I love that answer, man, because, you know, again, we have a lot of information. I tell people this all the time. You know, you got to pick your poison. You got to pick what you want to do. For some, you got to look at your circumstances. Where are you right now in your life? You got to let that dictate how you're going to move in real estate. But once you pick something, you got to stick with it, create the game plan around it, and just make things happen. You know what I mean? Which sometimes it could take a mental shift, man. What type of mindset shift do you feel people need to have in order to become an investor?
The first thing that immediately comes to mind is just realizing that you have everything you need right now. Like within you have what you need. Now, maybe there may be There may be a connection that you need to get or attract to yourself, or there may be some additional research you need to do on a particular strategy. But just at the core, the foundation of who you are enough. And understanding that you are enough and that you are equipped with what you need to accomplish something great, that you are preordained. There's a divine appointment, assignment on your life to do something great with that. So just that mental acknowledgement first, right? And then beyond that, making the decision to be teachable, right? To bring people to figure out when you ask yourself those questions, right? Time, money, credit, and when you figure out, the goal is to figure out where the deficits are, and then you bring the resources in your space or the people in your space to help you fill the deficit. And so many people will take a look and say, okay, I don't have this, so I need to wait. No, it's not that you need to wait. It's that you need to find someone to bring into your space to meet that particular need, so that
That's
you can
right.
start right now. I hope
Man, you sound like me, man.
that.
No, you sound just like me, man. I'm loving this conversation because it's almost like I'm listening to myself talk, you know, and I love the fact, and I know people are gonna listen to this and say, wow, man, those are some great points because, you know, these are real life examples of how you need to think as an investor. And as far as, you know, mindset, you know, you gotta, number one, you can't have the employee mindset. You gotta have an entrepreneur's mindset, right? And once you gain that in that entrepreneur's mindset, you'll understand that you gotta have a clear understanding of a little bit of everything, but you don't need to know everything in order to take action at the same time, because you gotta learn as you go as well. You know what I mean? Now, I know when we first started this conversation, I wanted to talk about passive income streams, and I also wanted to talk about some of the things that are really on people's minds today. So first off, how important is it to build up a passive income portfolio, in your opinion?
Man, it's so important. It's so important because that is what is going to create for you the freedom to pursue your real passions, man. Because if truth be told, I mean, I'm passionate about real estate. But if the truth be told, everybody's not going to be as passionate about real estate as I am. And what I found is I can't tell you the number of people that I meet at different ages and stages in their life that find themselves in the rat race. They're doing things monthly or weekly or whatever the case is because they have to do them because they need it to survive. They need it to pay their rent. They are in survival mode. But they do those things because they have to, not because they're passionate about it. If you can do take the steps necessary to create passive income, back to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that's what the book was all about. Create passive income to take care of your everyday needs, right? And once you got your everyday needs taken care of, it frees you up to a point where you can then really begin to dig deep and say, well, what do I really want to do with my life? What am I really passionate about? How can I serve in a different capacity? Because this weight that was on my back to make ends meet every month is no longer there, right? I've been really, really blessed to work with a number of high school and college students, right? And that whole house hacking piece has become huge for the message that I take to the college campus, right? The message is, let's use real estate to get you to a bag. Let me show you how to use real estate to live for free. And once you figured out how to use real estate to live for free, and you got that number one, that biggest expense that most people get locked into, that mortgage, or once you got that off your back, then you really are free to pursue your passions and do something great with your life.
Man, I love that. I love that that whole part of the conversation right there, man. I resonate with it on a different level because number one, Rich Dad Poor Dad was the first book I read from cover to cover, right? And when we talk about that book and the concepts of passive income, that's where these ideas came from in my head. That and also The Richest Man in Babylon, right? So I'll link both of those books in the description box for you guys to be able to check out. But when you talk about going to these different schools, and teaching how to become free through real estate. I'm actually doing that in real time with my daughter right now. So she literally just graduated high school 2 months ago. What we're doing is buying one house every 3 months for the next 5 years. We're buying fixer-uppers. We're putting money into them. We're refining the money out, and we're taking that money and doing it over and over and over again. That's what we're doing. But this allows her to create a certain level of financial independence so that she can now, she's going to be 23 years old, she can now live her life how she wants to live for the rest of her life at 23 years old. You know what I mean? And if she wants to continue buying real estate, that is entirely up to her. Then I'm going to pass it down to my next daughter and my next, I got five kids. So, but my point is, anybody can literally do this with the right information, with the right knowledge. You know what I mean? But there's a couple of things that hold people back from doing it as well. And that's the gist of what we wanted to talk about today, these horror stories that people hear. So what are some of these tenant horror stories that you hear come up? Let's talk about maybe three of them. Three tenant horror stories that, you know, maybe they're myths or legends or whatever you call it, that people think might happen, but it never actually happens. Because a lot of times people, they think of, they want to know everything before they actually get started. And then the thing that they thought about the most never actually happens, right?
That's
That's
right.
just a fact.
That's
So
right.
let's talk about some of these things that may be on people's minds, preventing them from starting that shouldn't. How about we do that?
Yeah, let's do that. Hey, the first one that comes to mind, and I hear it all the time, people say, I don't want to be a landlord because folks are going to come tear up my property, right? They're going to tear up my property. I don't want to put my hard-earned money into something and only to let a tenant move in and tear it up. And the reality is, like I've shared before, and you saw one of my videos where I was talking about, I don't have any tenant horror stories. Now, that's not to say I have not had people leave and owe me
Give you a
something.
headache.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've had to replace some carpet. I had to repaint. But the reality is, you have to do those things anyway. Whether you got a regular, whether you got grandma as a tenant, or I was gonna pick a name, but I won't. Right. Whether or a sister, you know, with three or four or five kids, when either one of them leave, you're gonna have to do something to the floor covering. You're gonna have to address the wall in some way or another, right? And these excuses, and that's really what it boils down to, is it really boils down to fear, right? And subconsciously, whether a person acknowledges it or not, they're subconsciously sabotaging their future, and they just grasp at anything because they're afraid to take the step necessary to find success. But the tenant that you're very few and far between, and you're gonna find a tenant that just comes in and does such horrible damage to your place that it completely outweighs the benefit of being an investor, right? You know, that tenant, you're paying the mortgage, somebody else is paying the mortgage down for you, right? It's the owning real estate is the only thing that I know, that the investment that I'm aware of, help me here, is the only investment I'm aware of that someone else can pay for, that you reap all the benefits for, right? They're paying your mortgage
And
down.
there's so many benefits.
So many benefits. They're paying the mortgage down. So over time, you're going to own it free and clear if you ride it out that long. It's appreciating in value. So you paid $100,000 for it today. This time next year is worth $104,000, $105,000. So it's appreciating in value. And you get to write off the expenses on your taxes. You get depreciation expenses, just a fake number that the government lets you make up, right? I mean,
It's crazy, man.
it is. You know,
But you know what else?
go ahead.
You know what else too, man? You know, a lot of people think about, for example, the replacing the carpet situation, right? You can minimize the headache when it comes to replacing carpets. You know, what we've been doing is just putting higher quality flooring in, right? Instead of, you know, carpets, we're putting LVP in. You know what I mean? You put LVP in, that stuff is like indestructible. Of course, nothing is completely indestructible, but you got great looking floors, Yeah, you're going to pay a little bit more money for it, but it's going to be worth it on the other end. So rather than, for example, having Formica countertops, you might put in granite. You know
Absolutely.
what I mean?
Yep.
You get to save money, less turnaround. You save more money in the long run. Yes, you're going to spend more money up front, but in the long run, you're going to save money. And that's, you have a better looking product, better looking house, and you could probably command higher rents because of it.
Exactly.
And people will take pride in living there, where
Exactly.
they're gonna go ahead and want to take care of the place. So you're gonna have less of a tenant headache in that regard as well.
Exactly. Very good.
You know.
That's absolutely correct. Man, another horror story that people often talk about is just the whole rent collection piece, right? I move in my house and they're not going to pay me rent, and that comes down to, now, don't get me wrong, sometimes people face hard times and they're challenged, things like COVID that you just can't plan for, right? Or people get laid off and all of those things happen. Life happens to a tenant just like it happens to us, right? All of that aside, you have to, as a landlord, be really clear about your screening process, right? And I think that's another reason why I don't have really any horror stories, because I'm very clear on what my screening process is, right? First and foremost, don't rent to nobody you know. Just don't rent to your
Oh,
cousin.
you don't definitely
Don't
don't want
do
to do that,
it. Just don't do that, right? But you have to have policies, protocols, and practices. You have to pull a credit report. Partner with companies that will screen the tenant for it. You actually have to check the references. Those types of things. I don't think I know for sure will really assist or aid in that process of avoiding the whole rent collection piece. And I mentioned having a subsidized portfolio, like you subsidized for me, meaning Atlanta Housing Authority Section 8. That works for some people, for others it don't. I doesn't. I absolutely love it because there's a certain level of guarantee that I get by renting to
Guaranteed money.
a Section 8 tenant, right? And so, prior to the crash of 08, my portfolio was not subsidized, and I did feel the effects of that. But when COVID came around, I had zero rent collection issues because everybody, 95% of my portfolio is a subsidized portfolio. So, the concerns that people had when COVID hit, I didn't have those concerns. So it's just a matter of what works for you and for your portfolio and for your business model.
Absolutely. I'm an advocate of Section 8 and subsidized having a subsidized portfolio as well. And to be honest with you, man, during the pandemic, I didn't have any, I don't think I've had one tenant that didn't pay. Even in my regular rentals, I didn't have not one person that didn't pay. I collected all throughout the pandemic without a problem. But like you said, it's all due to the screening process, right? How well are you screening these people that's moving into your house? Are you going to their property or their apartment where they live to see how they live before you let them live in your place? So for rather than meeting up at your place, for example, you might meet them at their place to see how they're living. Right, you might show up, set up an appointment, or show up unexpectedly. Hey, I see that you wanted to live in my place. I just wanted to come over and sign some paperwork with you. Is it okay to stop by in 10 minutes? You
Exactly.
know what I mean? That way, you could kind of glance what they're living like and how well they're going to take care of your property. So little things like that is going to help you when it comes to, making sure that you minimize your headaches when it comes to any landlord issues. But overall, like you said, it really isn't a big deal. These are things that you have to do as a business owner anyway. And the more screening you do up front, the less of a headache you're going to have on the back end.
That's
You know what I
great.
mean?
And it's it really
And here's a,
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and here's another thing, man. Like a lot of people worry about the 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls. The only reason you're going to get a phone call 3 o'clock in the morning is because your property sucks at the end of the day. If you're buying a house as a fixer-upper, for example, and you put the right amount of work into that property, say it needed a new roof, rather than skipping out on the roof and saying, oh, I can last another 5 years, put a new roof on the house, put some new toilet bowls in there, put some new flooring. If your property is performing well, it minimizes the headache. So every property that we plan on holding on to for, let's say, 5 years or more, I'm completely gutting the place out, putting new units, new everything into it, and I don't ever get a phone call because of it. So how you treat the property is how the tenants are going to treat you at the end of the
Absolutely.
day.
That's 1,000% correct. I hear people, new investors all the time who they're trying to cut corners, right? Trying to cut corners. And they are the ones, if you, I mean, you just said it. If you do a great renovation, you're not gonna get any maintenance calls. Like very rarely. And if you do, it's something that you can get taken care of pretty quick. You put new stuff in it. A lot of times the stuff that you might get a call on is still under warranty if you do it right up front.
That's it, man. That's the name of the game. So that debunks two things that people might have in the back of their mind, stopping them from investing in real estate. What else do you have in mind, bro?
Man, those really were my top two or
Those are the solid ones.
those are the ones, right? I always like to say when it comes to tenant placement, is just being very, very clear. So, and it's the simple things, right? Like you mentioned, very simple things. But like if somebody calls and I have a prop, if I have a property available for rent, right? And they call, and one of the first questions I ask is, how soon do you need to move? If they tell me they need to move this coming weekend, I already know it's an issue.
You already know what the issue is. They're getting evicted, man.
Bro, why do you need to move so quick? I mean, I already know. I am pretty much.
Had a guy, I'll tell you this, man. I was renting out one of the houses recently, and a guy was living in a hotel, him and his girlfriend, and I guess they had some kids, him and his wife. I'm not sure if they were married or whatever, but they was desperate to get, and this was around tax season, so they had a little bit of money. They were desperate to give me this money so that they could move in. I guarantee you I would have had a headache if I would have moved those people in.
Oh yeah,
Guaranteed,
for
man.
sure.
Because number one, you're living in a hotel.
Right.
If you're telling me you're living in a hotel or a motel or whatever,
Yeah.
why are you living in a hotel
Yeah.
and you have a
Exactly.
little bit of money to put down on a rental? You know,
Exactly.
so that's red flag number one.
You know, and
So you can't be desperate for the money.
you can't. And the flip side of it is, and this is how they'll get you too sometimes. Somebody will come and say, I'll pay 4 months rent in advance. Just don't pull my credit.
I
Where
had a girl do that.
is rent? Like, what you gonna
Yep, I had a girl do that, man.
do?
Yep. I had a female do that. It was just her and her son. She said her baby, her son's father, I'll call him that. Her son's father would come there and stay once in a while. She said, I'll give you a whole 6 months up front. And it looks good on paper, but the headache that's gonna come with it on the other end is gonna is forget about it. So I found one guy who, and this was during the pandemic, I found one guy who he was making really good money. He just got out of the divorce, so his situation wasn't conducive to what he was used to. But he's making 8 grand a month, and I was only renting a place for 1250 a month. It was without a problem. He had 2 months up front. He wasn't desperate, none of that stuff. And he was an older guy, 60 something years old. He was a really good tenant, right? Took care of the property. He actually put money into the property at this point. You know what I mean? But you got to look out for stuff like this. This is how you minimize the headaches and maximize the potential on the properties. You know, one more that I'll go with to make it number three. I see people all the time, they'll say, they'll have these what if questions, right? What if the person loses their job? You know, and that can happen. Life can happen. You know, and we kind of talked about that. We addressed that when we talked about the pandemic issue. You really can't do much about that, but what you can do is, you know, minimize your risk by going with subsidiary type of living, right? Go with the Section 8 type of living. And even still, you know, let's say somebody loses their job, you can always buy them out. Just say, look, I know we have a lease, but I got to collect on this property at some point. You know what I mean? You can negotiate something with the tenant to be able to help them find something cheaper. So I'd rather stop the bleeding than to go ahead and take a complete loss on the property or put myself at risk of losing the property altogether. So you gotta, these are things that you can always do. Does it happen all the time? Absolutely not. I can't tell you, I bought over 2,000 units in 20 plus years, and I probably had maybe one tenant headache where the tenant left and I had to bomb the place because she left a bunch of roaches, you know, but that was about it. You know what I mean? And this is over, we're talking about over 1,000 units easily. It doesn't happen that often, man.
It doesn't. And with the last point you made too about, what if they lose their job? There are companies now that can do that can do some sort of security deposit and rent guarantees, right? So you can have your tenant go through underwriting through these insurance company type, like there's one called LEAP, LEAP that comes to mind. But there are others out there. You can have some rent guarantee in place where if the tenant loses their job or if the tenant defaults, these companies will step up and cover certain expenses for them. So like they're really Jamel, at the end of the day, there really just are no should be no excuses.
No excuses, man. No excuses at all. And to make things, just to kind of streamline things, I know this is kind of going off topic a little bit, but we collect all of our rent automatically, right? So I'll link a software in the description box that you guys can look into if you want to, you know, if you want your rents automatically collected through your tenant, so you don't have to go around town collecting. It's more of a property management style software which collects rent for you, helps you screen the tenants, and also it will allow you to get insurance on on your tenants as well. So in case, like what Keto was just saying, you know, you can't collect for a couple months, the insurance will take care of it for you, man.
So we use
There are two books. What were you gonna say?
I use Buildium. Who do you use?
I use a couple of different apps, man. One of them I'm just getting familiar with. I won't mention the name, because
Was I
I'm
not
kind of.
mention the name?
No, that's fine. That's fine, man. What was the app that you said you were using?
I use Buildium. Buildium. Oh, it's a
The one that we Buildium. Yeah, I've heard of it. I've heard of that app. This one is more of let me look through my phone real quick.
I was just curious, but yeah, why?
No, man, this is good because I there was one that we recently started using because we literally just switched over.
So
I'm trying to remember.
while you're looking, let me make this point. Let me say that.
Turbo Tenant. Turbo Tenant was one of them, which I'm starting to get familiar with it. I kind of like it, but there's another one that I won't mention because I'll tell you what, I'm going to link that one in the description box for you guys to check out as well. All right.
All right.
But Buildium, they've been around for a little while, man. I've heard of them. I haven't used them myself. We have used others, but I'm particularly taking a liking to Turbo Tenant and this other app that we're looking into as well.
Well, let me make this point. It sounds like we're about to wrap up, but since we're on this particular topic, it's very important, especially if you're new, right, to start on the right foot, right, and see your investments as a business and run it like a business.
That's right.
I can't tell you, I've met folks with 10 units and they got tenants still paying them on Cash App. I'm not going to pick up nobody's rent. I don't want you to cash out me rent. Like run it like a business, because when it comes time to refinance, when it comes time to make other moves, to make other acquisitions, if you are doing stuff properly and in a tenant management software, you should be able to push a button and send that lender what he or she needs to help you go to underwriting to get that next unit, as opposed to scrounging around at the last minute trying to pull Excel reports and Cash App ledgers, and just do it right from the start. And I tell you, that'll eliminate 50% of your headaches right there. Just
Absolutely.
policies in place and following them.
Absolutely, man. Now, Keto, how can our listeners get in contact with you if they wanted more information?
Keto J Johnson, Kito J Johnson, on all platforms, any social media platform, Clubhouse, I do a clubhouse room every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Been doing it almost 3 years. Call us Sunday Morning Real Estate Wealth Chat. KetoJJohnson.com is my website. I'm Keto J Johnson on Facebook, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, on Twitter. That's where you find me.
Sounds good. I'm gonna go ahead and link all that in the description box for you guys. Make sure you reach out to Keto, man. He knows his stuff, obviously. He's been doing it a little longer than I have. I consider myself to be an OG, but look, Keto is he's even OG-er than me. I just made that word up.
You made it up.
But he's doing his thing out here, man, and I love it. I love the fact that, I love the fact that what you're doing for the community. I love the fact that people are learning, and that's what we're here to do, man. Teach families and individuals as well how to create time and freedom through passive income streams and real estate investing in general, man. So if you had to provide our listeners with some last words of advice, what would those words be?
Do something. Right, do something. I don't know how many of you might be watching or listening to this, and that's all you do is watch and listen to podcasts. Look, we want you to take some action, right? That is the only way. And you mentioned your daughter having graduated. So we're going through that whole process with my daughter now. She's in her last year of high school. So every day there's a conversation about where to apply for college. What am I going to do? And what I want her to understand is while she's trying to figure out how to make the perfect decision, she wants to make the perfect decision, pick the perfect college, pick the perfect bay. But sometimes, not sometimes, all the time, indecision is worse than the not so perfect decision. And we if we lean back to how we kind of started the conversation around the whole faith piece. I think God honors a wrong decision over no decision at all. Because when you make a decision, there's an element of faith that it takes to make that decision and move forward, not knowing what the outcome may or may not be, but making an educated decision, just moving forward. I made a decision. That's when God says, all right, you did your part. You stepped out on faith. Now let me give you everything you need. Let me funnel the resources in your direction so you can see through and find success. If you step back and you just go from podcast to podcast and book to book and online course and never do anything, there's really nothing for God to step, to put his wind behind or to put his breath behind to push you forward because all you're doing is gathering information. So I want to challenge you to make a decision, to step out on faith. And this time next year, let's talk about what you've accomplished and what you've learned over the past 12 months.
I love it, man. The scriptures tell us faith without works is dead.
Dead.
So you got to do something. You can have the faith, but you ain't putting in the work.
Absolutely.
Nothing's ever going to happen. Love
Absolutely.
it, man. Love it, love it, love it. Great conversation, bro. I would love to have you on a combo on a podcast again. Love to have another conversation with you, man. If you guys want to see Keto on this podcast again, leave a comment in the comment section. There's a world of things that we could talk about. Between him and I, there's so much that we could that you guys can learn that we could go into detail on. But let us know in the comment section what you think. Be sure to like this video, subscribe to this channel, click the notification bell, check Keto out on all his social platforms as well. And I'll see you guys on the next one.